At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine crisis in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. Felix Light of CBS News and the Moscow Times is traveling across Central Asia. These are the stands, formerly Soviet states, client states, now liberated to explore markets and prosperity. Tashkent is a marvel city. It's very low. It's nothing above 5 or 6 stories because of the earthquake risk that once upon a time cracked the city during the Soviet era. Felix, a wonderful good day to you in Tashkent. I enjoyed my time there enormously, especially because the people are so eager to join us in the West with prosperity and Amazon. But we must immediately go to your impressions of Tashkent as a wonderful new culture, to it being a refuge of Russians leaving Russia during this crisis. You reported that there was a diaspora building in Istanbul. Is there a diaspora building in Tashkent? Good day to you, Felix.
Good day, John. Well, you know, yes and no, I think. You know, certainly sort of there's been a reasonable, you know, a notable, I think, stream of Russians coming to Uzbekistan, which was a little bit unusual in its own way because, you know, this is not a country that, you know, Russians tend to get sort of romantic and sort of, you know, rose-tinted eyes over. You know, many sort of Russians, frankly, know almost as little of Uzbekistan as we in the West do. So, you know, there was no, this wouldn't be a sort of an obvious destination for sort of Russians to leave in the way that perhaps Turkey or Georgia or Armenia was. You know, these are cities that have, these are countries, I should say, that have taken in a great deal of sort of young, wealthy, affluent, educated Russians fleeing the sort of the situation at home right now. Uzbekistan is perhaps a little bit more of a niche choice, but you know, there are a lot of Russians here. And there are a lot of people who are sort of capitalizing on that arrival of Russians here. You know, you hear of Russian companies that are marketing what they call sort of card tourism programs, where they essentially take Russians to Uzbekistan, get them a local bank account, which comes, of course, with a bank card, a MasterCard or a Visa. And this is, of course, very important because, you know, Russian cards, Russian-issued cards, including Visas, including MasterCards, have now sort of, you know, stopped working outside Russia. So many Russians who are very keen to get a bank account that works outside the country are coming to Uzbekistan to get what they need. So, you know, there is a little bit of a flood, I would say, perhaps not a flood, but a trickle of Russians coming here, you know, in this sort of brave new reality of the war in Ukraine and, you know, escalating difficulties and repression at home.
I recommend to Russians looking for a wonderful, comfortable place to enjoy the food, Tashkent is waiting for you. Felix, Moscow also is watching refugee flow, but not out of Russia to Tashkent or Istanbul, instead out of Ukraine into Russia. These are the Ukrainians who are trapped by the conflict zone in Kyiv and Kharkiv and Donbass, who cannot cross to go west to Lviv, and instead have moved into what they can find in Kursk. You were near the Russian border right before the conflict started. These are people who are not out of Donetsk or Luhansk, loyal to Moscow. These are people who are lost. Are they being provided for? You have a compelling story in the Moscow Times.
Yeah, indeed. You know, this is sort of an emerging sort of topic that a few media organizations have sort of addressed recently, that there, you know, there's a non-zero number of sort of Ukrainians who are not, you know, natural sort of supporters of Russia, who are actually having to seek shelter, seek asylum in Russia. And, you know, this comes with all sorts of risks, because on the one hand, even though sort of Russia makes it very, very, very easy to sort of regularize yourself and even get citizenship as a sort of a Russian-speaking Ukrainian, you know, we've seen these reports of sort of like filtration camps. You know, the Ukrainian side, the Ukrainian government has claimed that some Ukrainians who end up in Russia end up sort of seeking asylum in Russia are being tortured. So, you know, it's not a sort of an easy route. However, you know, it does seem that this is something that's building in popularity, and it is sort of it does sort of appear to sort of be cropping up more and more. You know, a colleague of mine wrote about it, of course, last few days, and previous to that, another colleague of mine wrote an excellent story about that, sort of speaking to these sort of refugees who are sort of put up in hotels and really given the red carpet treatment. You know, it's sort of a bit of a propaganda offensive, I think, from the point of view of the Russian authorities, who are almost looking to win over these Ukrainian sort of refugees here. So, you know, it's an interesting situation, and it really does sort of, I think, tell you a little bit about the sort of the paradoxes and the contradictions of this war in Ukraine.
These are internally displaced people who are now displaced persons with no certain future, and we don't know their number. We also don't know the number of Russian citizens in Petersburg, in Moscow, who are being abused by the Russian authorities because they've put out what is called fake news. I read a story in the Moscow Times. A St. Petersburg artist and musician faces up to 10 years in prison for spreading so-called fake news about Russia's war in Ukraine on price tags at a local supermarket. Felix, what I take from this story is that people are informing on others, and that the authorities are being brutal towards anyone who steps out of line, no matter how young, no matter how spontaneous, no matter how innocent the dissension was. The brutality is real. What do you hear from Moscow? What does the Moscow Times hear about the risk to young Russians, not older Russians, young ones?
Well, you know, yeah, I think I would agree with sort of what you said broadly there. You know, there is a fairly sort of wide-ranging and in many ways extremely harsh crackdown on anyone who sort of steps out of line on the question of the war, you know, who dares to sort of, you know, dissent from the sort of Kremlin orthodoxy that, you know, it's a special operation, you know, it's there to, you know, denazify Ukraine and all this other nonsense. You know, this is sort of, you know, really sort of par for the course now in the last sort of, you know, month to sort of 6 weeks to 2 months in Russia, you know, really sort of escalating, you know, legal pressure and indeed quite a lot of social pressure as well against really anyone who sort of dares to sort of take the opposing view. You know, we've seen a number of cases of things like teachers actually losing their jobs because they're being informed upon by their students. You know, I know of at least two cases where that has happened. So, you know, this is a sort of a rising sort of trend here. And what I think you see is that, you know, early in the war, we would puzzle over sort of what the sort of the breakdown really of Russian public opinion was. And I think, you know, here we are, you know, 2 months in almost, and it does seem that there is a sort of a rallying round the flag effect at home. You know, you do see, I think, in data, and I think also anecdotally, that there does seem to be quite a phenomenon of Russians who were not initially pro the war, really sort of coming home, and sort of you get this very divided society where sort of society has been polarized really between very, very strong opponents of it and very, very, very strong proponents of it. And there's really not that much middle ground left, I think.
Finally, we just have about a minute. What do you hear about price spikes? We talked about this last week, but it's around the world now, Felix. They're doubling prices everywhere, even in soup kitchens in poor people's neighborhoods of Lima, Peru. Do you hear the same thing out of Russia?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I think that inflationary pressures were hitting Russia pretty hard even before the war. You know, this was something that was coming up on the agenda sort of a year ago now.
Right.
You know, really sort of, you know, food prices getting out of control. And you know, you've got to put this in context that this is sort of in a country like Russia where you have a very large percent of the population is on a fixed income, i.e. you know, pension. It's a very old society, and it's also not a particularly wealthy society. You know, pensions are not large. You know, it's very, very, very difficult to get by on a Russian sort of state pension, which is what most people have, because of course, you know, they worked under the Soviet Union where there was no private business, there were no sort of private retirement plans. And so, you know, this is something that's been going on for a while, and I think the war is really only driving things further. You know, what we've seen is sort of certain supply chains, you know, that are crucial for sort of the manufacture of some goods, really breaking down, I think.
Felix Light, CBS News, Moscow Times, in the wonderful city of Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan, Central Asia. I'm John Bashley.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Bachelor.